Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome into Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. First heard here on the station every Tuesday at 1 p.m. and you can catch us again on a Thursday at 9 p.m. or if you prefer a podcast, then in all the usual places you can find us each Friday. Tech Talk, of course, it's your opportunity for blind and partially sighted people to come together to explore the world of technology. We're always keen to receive your contributions, emails or voice notes. It's the usual address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be hearing from RNIB volunteer and chef Kim Jay, who talks us through some of the best accessible gadgets to make our kitchens more accessible. Callum Stoneman will be trying the all-new ChatGPT app, and we will be learning about Site Village Central at a new venue this summer. So stay tuned for all of that coming up here on Tech Talk. Welcome in, Callum Stoneman, our co-host this week. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good, thanks. How are you? You're sounding better than when I spoke to you a couple of days ago. I think you've been suffering this week, haven't you?
we're getting there, I think. Yeah. What's in your technology in tray just now, Callum?
Well, I've just been playing around with this ChatGPT app. It's nice having that as an official app as opposed to a web interface. And, you know, it's very nice just having that easily accessible on the home screen. And we're going to be getting into that. But you just can't move for AI at the minute.
Indeed. And this week, of course, it's Apple's WWDC. Yeah. So we'll be interested to hear reactions to that and all the announcements. We'll bring you that on next week's show. Right, Callum Stoneman, looking forward to hearing your demo. Stick around, it's Tech Talk. Did you know that in the UK, help is available to purchase accessible technology items? Harold Davis now hears from Ali Safter from RNIB's Technology Grant Scheme.
What sort of difference could a new piece of accessible technology make to your day-to-day life? Are high prices stopping you from making a purchase? Well, help is at hand from RNIB. Joining me now to talk about RNIB's technology grants is Ali Safter, RNIB's technology grants coordinator. Ali, welcome to RNIB Connect Radio.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having me.
And what difference do you think accessible technology can make to people who are blind or partially sighted?
In today's digital world, smartphones, tablets have become the norm for everyone. I think the big issue for blind and partially sighted people is actually getting their hands on that equipment because of the price of equipment. But smartphones, tablets, and then on the other side of the spectrum, things like talking microwaves, all of this equipment is essential. And that's, you know, that is the word I would use to make sure that people are being in a situation where they're living in an inclusive environment. So they are able to, for example, make and receive calls themselves. They're able to book their appointments online now with GPs, which seems to be the norm for everyone. And they're able to cook their foods for the right amount of time. So that'd be things like ensuring that food is not undercooked and they get food poisoning or overcooked and all the nutritional value is lost from the food. All tech equipment is essential. Another example I'd give is, for example, video magnifiers. People are very interested, and quite rightly so, in knowing what's on their bank statement. Some people do still receive printed versions of that. They might want to know best before dates on food packaging. You know, obviously, there's equipment around now, and it is a forever evolving thing is technology. So we want to make sure that people have all the latest gadgets.
So one of the ways that we're talking about that technology can be made more affordable is with help from an RNIB technology grant. Tell us how it works.
So in order to get a grant from RNIB, I usually bundle it up into three criteria when I'm speaking to people, just so that it's easier to digest. The first one is that they must be registered blind or partially sighted with their local authority. Number two is that they do need to be on a means-tested benefit. So that's things like ESA, JSA, income support, pension credit, housing benefit, council tax support, and universal credit. Now, we do not consider contributions-based versions of ESA or JSA. We do not consider PIP or DLA or tax credits, but most other benefits are considered, and the letter must be dated in the last year. So we do need evidence of means-tested benefit. The third criteria is that the person needs to provide with their application a letter of support. It needs to be on the headed paper of the organization supporting their application. And a letter of support needs to confirm, number one, the person is registered either blind or partially sighted. Number two, exactly what is needed with the make, model, and price of the item or items they're requesting. This must marry up with the application form. Number three, the letter must give examples of what the items will be used for and the benefits the person will derive from owning them. And finally, number four, it needs to confirm that the local authority has been approached to fund the item or items and that funding request has been refused. Now, that is super, super, super important, because not many people know this, but local authorities do have an obligation not only to blind and partially sighted people, but other disabled people and vulnerable people, to carry out an assessment of their needs, which includes equipment, and in theory should be providing them with the equipment they need. So if they need a new iPad, that should be provided through the needs assessment. And similarly with a smartphone or a video magnifier or talking kitchen equipment, all of this should be provided. Now, in reality, local authorities don't have the budget to do this. This should be readily available to any blind or partially sighted person. But unfortunately, if local authorities did start giving out thousands and thousands of pounds worth of equipment, then they wouldn't be able to provide the other help and support that they do for example, home care and such like.
And is there a list available of the eligible items that people can apply for grant money for?
Yes, so that is in our grant application form and in the guidance notes. And we generally say that if it's not listed, we will not fund it. But we would always say to people that if there's an item that they feel maybe should be added onto a list, we would never refuse an application based on an item that's not listed. It could be that it could loosely fall underneath one of the other criteria, one of the other funded items. So, you know, we will look at all applications.
And how can someone make an application for a grant? How do you get that process started?
So there's various options available. We want to make our grant application process as accessible as possible for everyone. We will consider grant applications that are printed off and filled in and sent back to us with the supporting evidence. We accept applications that might be in a Word document. We accept applications now, and this is, we are really, really excited about this. We are now going digital, and hopefully very soon people will be able to make applications online and just upload their supporting evidence. That's not quite gone live yet, but watch this space. It is a exciting development.
And how long does it take for the process to take place on average, from making the application first to then receiving the funds or the product itself?
With a good application, if there's no further information needed, it's between 3 and 4 weeks. With an application where more information is needed, what we tend to say to people is once we have all the evidence that we require back, it's usually around 2 weeks from that time.
And is this a limited time offer, Ali? How long will the grants be available?
People are able to apply for a grant every 3 years from RNIB. So it's quite a long time. And of course, with tech equipment, it gets out of date fairly quickly.
And where's the best place to find out more information about the RNIB technology grants and how people can apply?
That would be on RNIB's websites. And if you search for grants, all of the information will be there for you.
Well, it's great to know that there's that bit of extra help available to make things easier and get accessible technology to the people who need it. Ali Safter, Technology Grants Coordinator for RNIB. Thanks for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
No worries at all. Thank you for having me.
How easy is it to make your kitchen a more accessible and safer place? Well, Paulina has been finding out more from RNIB volunteer and chef Kim Jay.
Kim J is an RNIB volunteer and author of recipe books A Taste of Spice and A Sense of Cooking, and of course a passionate cook. She lost a substantial amount of her sight when she was 30 years old. However, over the years she continued to pursue her passion for cooking by adapting her kitchen to suit her needs. Well, she joins me now to tell us a little bit more about how we can make our kitchens more accessible. It is lovely speaking with you today.
Yes, lovely speaking to you.
Now, what would you say was the very first adaptation you made after you lost such a significant amount of your sight that made you go, oh yes, this is really going to work?
It's the simplest of things. It was actually the bump-ons. You know, simple things like being able to know what temperature your oven's on, what setting it's on. And using the bump-ons was amazing because I no longer had to ask people for help to say, well, you know, can you put me on to 180 degrees? Because that's exactly where the bump-on was. It gave me a little bit of independence in the kitchen.
So what other adaptations have you made? Because I imagine there's been quite a few since your journey into cooking again.
There's been quite a lot. All my spices, all my herbs, I've got either, you know, the pen friend labels on them so I can use a pen friend to read them, or I have bump-ons on, or the liquid tacky mark, for instance, on my sort of salt, chili powder, black pepper, I put an S or a C or P. So I instantaneously know where everything is in the kitchen. I then start bringing in and buying those little sort of accessible equipments that make a huge difference. The first one I got was my kitchen scales. So easy to use, and it talks to you because I bake a lot. And as we all know, when you lose your sight, the main obstacles, especially in the kitchen, that you come up against is everything is digital. So you're constantly trying to search for things that have dials that you can put markers on so you know which settings they're on. But having a talking microwave that is so simple that you can just, it talks to you, it tells you what settings, the times, whether or not it's on or off. Absolutely brilliant. I could not do without my talking microwave, so much so I've got two. I've got one talking microwave and I've got one that's a combination microwave and oven. So I'm always sort of prepared for great big parties. And then we have all the various other equipments like sort of the chopping boards. Now, I have this fabulous chopping board where it's got prongs on it. So if you're going to cut an onion, you can put the onion onto the prongs and it keeps it steady. And that way I can safely cut and chop whatever I need. And it is so easy. And then there's things like the food thermometer, especially when you cook meat and you're not used to the texture of meat and knowing when meat is safe to eat. It even measures really cold temperatures. Brilliant for the freezer, just to check that it is below sort of 18 degrees. And again, for your fridge, making sure that your fridge is below 7 degrees and is in the safe zone.
I would like to actually find out a bit more about the pen friend. Would you mind explaining just very briefly, how does it work for someone who maybe never heard of it?
Well, it looks and feels like a pen and it comes with these labels. Now you put the labels on whatever jars. For instance, if I've got two herbs, rosemary in one and dried tarragon in other, I can put the label in and I can actually sort of speak into the pen friend and record the name of the herb. Once I've done that and I've set the recording, all I then have to do is whenever I'm sort of searching for my herbs, I get my pen friend, you just wave it across the label and it'll read it out to you. It is so simple to use. I don't just use it in the kitchen. I've got it on my CDs as well. You can have it on whatever you want and use it on sort of tins and cans and bottles, so that you're not opening a can of beans, which turns out to be cat food, you know, because the label's stuck on.
Well, another one that's worth chatting about, especially when it comes to the kitchen, I think is the hob. Sometimes when, depending on what sort of hob you have, whether it's an induction or a gas, you can have some issues with using it.
They've got a fabulous sort of gadget. It looks like a banana. It's bright yellow. I think you can get it in orange as well. And what you can do is you can actually put it onto your induction hob. Now, you can't use it, obviously, on gas and electric. It's got to be induction. You place it onto your hob. And what it does, it surrounds your pan. So not only does it keep your pan pretty firm on the hob, but because it's brightly coloured, you exactly know where to place it. Now, you do have talking hobs, but you would have to do a bit of research to find them. But again, bump-ons, brilliant. Put your bump-ons on so you know where the on button off is, where the off button off is, where sort of halfway point is, and the hob then becomes accessible.
Oh, that sounds really fantastic. Now, what would you say is your top number one adaptation for the kitchen or kitchen appliance?
I think it's got to be the microwave, without a doubt. Now, there's several reasons for this. First of all, the talking microwaves, people think, oh, it's so much more expensive than normal microwave. Actually, it isn't. It's only just slightly sort of more expensive. Now, the great thing about microwaves is, especially when you're not used to cooking or you don't feel confident in the kitchens, is it sits on the unit. So you're not having to go into the oven and to sort of pull things out of the oven, try and work out where the sides are, try and not sort of find the racks or drop everything. So because it stands on the unit, it is a lot safer and it talks to you. You can cook so many things in them, from soups, sauces. It's not just for heating. A lot of people use microwaves for just heating things up, but you can cook with them. And if you have a combination microwave, you can actually bake in them as well. So brilliant to use. And I couldn't live without it. In fact, my children, who are grown up and excited, actually prefer the talking microwave. They're a bit lazy. So they can switch it on and sort of go into the living room, watch the TV. And because the microwave does a countdown and it sort of tells you when it's done, you can hear it. Very easy to use.
Well, you gave us so much, so many tips today, so much advice. And if we wanted to get in touch, you are on social media.
I am. I have my own webpage, YouTube channel, Facebook, Kim J. Cox. And sort of the one thing that I always say to everybody is that if there is anything that you want to use in the kitchen and you're struggling with, just give RNIB Helpline a call, because they can actually look and see if there's anything available that can help. They'll talk through, you know, sort of how the item works and everything. So it's always worth ringing up and finding out if that little piece of equipment that you need is there.
Well, let's actually give out that phone number. So the phone number for the RNIB helpline, if you would like to get in touch and maybe have some questions about making your kitchen more accessible, just call them on 0303-123-9999. Or you can also actually check out the RNIB shopfront. There's a lot of kitchen appliances there. So the address for that one is shop.rnib.org.uk. But for now, Kim J, it has been lovely speaking with you on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
If you've been listening to Tech Talk for the last few months, you will have no doubt heard us talking a lot about AI, and specifically ChatGPT, which is a chatbot developed by a company called OpenAI. And chatbots really are nothing new. They've been around for quite a long time, usually in customer service. So you might go to a website, let's say your mobile provider's website, and on the contact page, instead of giving you a phone number, or, well, usually as well as giving you a phone number, it might say, chat to our virtual agent, or something like that, or our virtual assistant. And you go on there and you put in a question, like, why is my bill £10 higher this month? And this chatbot will come back and give you information. It might be from the knowledge base articles on the company's website, about why your bill might be higher. If it's a really good one, then it might pull back some info about your account specifically and say, oh, it looks like you went over your data this month, or it looks like you were abroad this month and that's why your bill's higher. But usually these are pretty limited. They've got a really basic knowledge behind them. They're trained with a fairly basic set of commands and keywords. And usually it's getting just enough information to speed things up when it actually puts you through to a real human. OpenAI, though, and ChatGPT is completely different. This has got a huge knowledge behind it, a huge amount of data behind it. Pretty much it knows everything about everything up until, I believe it's late 2021 was the cutoff of this. So that is when they kind of stopped training it and stopped updating it. And because of the amount of knowledge that it's got, you can ask it just about anything. You can ask it to help you write stories, write reports, summarize documents. It can even write things in the style of somebody else. It's pretty scary stuff and pretty hard to describe, really, because of the amount that it can do. It's almost easier to say, well, what can't it do? And this has been available for a while. You've been able to go on any device. You've been able to go to chat.openai.com and sign up there and have a play around with this. But because that's a web interface, it's always been fully accessible, but it's always been a little bit all over the place just with it being a website. You know, you've always got the toolbars and the address bar and the buttons from your browser, so from Safari or Edge or Chrome or whatever you're using, they sort of get in the way. And because it's a website, you could create a shortcut to it. For example, on iOS, you could bookmark it or you could add it to your home screen. But again, because it's a website, it might sometimes log you out and then you've got to sign back in again. And just little things like that that make it not the best experience. But now OpenAI themselves have released an official app for ChatGPT. This is available on iOS. Android, I believe, is coming soon at the time of this recording. They've just said the Android app will be coming soon, but the iOS one is now out. And you can just go into the App Store, search for ChatGPT. There are a lot of apps that use the ChatGPT API, but the official one is developed by OpenAI, so just keep an eye out for that. It's a free app with in-app purchases, so you can sign up to GPT Plus if you want to, and that will give you access to the slightly newer learning model and language model. And I believe it's got some more up-to-date knowledge behind it as well. But to be honest, I think you'll be fine with the free one, depending on what you want to use this for. Even the free one is pretty mind-blowing, really. If you've already used ChatGPT via the OpenAI website, then you can use the same account details to log into the app. If you haven't, then you can just create an account on the within the app. And it's the usual sort of thing to create an account, it's just email address, password. I think it asks for a phone number as well, just to, as an extra method of verifying who you are. And then you should be good to go, really. The first thing you'll notice when you open the app for the first time is that the haptic feedback is a bit much, in my opinion. The vibrations on your phone might go a bit crazy, but that is normal. You can turn that off as well. I'll show you how you do that towards the end. But I'm going to open the app, and what we're going to see is where you'll land once you sign up or log in. So from my home screen, I'm just going to launch ChatGPT.
ChatGPT. ChatGPT. Menu. Button. Pop-up button.
So at the very top, we've got a menu button.
New message. Text field. Dictation. Button. Sent. Dimmed. Button. Sent. Dimmed. Button.
That's all we've got. We've got a menu button. We've got a text field to send a message. We've got a dictate button and we've got a sent button. That button label always stays as sent at the minute. It should be send at this point, but that's okay. We know what it means and I'm sure that'll be fixed soon enough. And that's all there is to it. So that is all there is to ChatGPT. You can just type to it. You can just type whatever you want. And the dictation button, it's worth noting that the dictate button literally just does dictation. So a bit like the dictate button on the Apple keyboard, it doesn't speak the response back to you. It just puts the response into text and puts it in the text field ready for you to send it. The difference between the dictation button within the app and the dictation button on the iOS keyboard is The one on the app is using OpenAI's own voice recognition model and speech-to-text translation, whereas the one on the keyboard is using the Apple one. So if you find the Apple one's not great, you could come in here and dictate, and it might give you better results using that dictation button next to the text field. There is a history section as well. So every conversation that you have with this is saved in your account's history. And I can show you two things in one. So I'm going to go to the history first, and I can show you how to access your history, and also a conversation that I had with this earlier when I was playing around and doing some testing. And I think this will just show you, if you haven't used this, I think this will just show you how powerful this is and how incredible this is. So I'm going to go back to the top of the screen to click on menu.
Menu, button, pop-up, history, button, settings, button, history, button.
First option is history. So I'll double tap on that.
History, heading.
And now we're in the history section. It automatically names the conversations for you. You can rename them yourself if you want, but I've just left this one at the default name.
Close, button, search, search field. Today, virtual reality unveiled, chapter 17.
So it's called it virtual reality unveiled, and you'll see why in a minute. So if I go into this section of the history, this conversation.
Virtual GPT menu button, pop-up button.
We've got that menu button at the top, but now we're in the conversation that I had with this earlier today. So I said to it, and this just to give you an idea of how incredible these responses are. All I said to ChatGPT was, just for a bit of fun, I said, write me a chapter of Harry Potter that is set in the 21st century. And this is what it came back with.
GPT, Callum.
So that's my name, and the following is my message.
Write a chapter of Harry Potter that is set in the 21st century.
So there's my message, and then the next one is GPT's response.
GPT, chapter 17, The Enigma of the Virtual Realm. Harry Potter and his friends found themselves facing a new challenge in the 21st century, the mysterious world of virtual reality. The trio had heard whispers about an underground wizarding game that immersed players in a lifelike virtual realm. Intrigued, they decided to explore this new phenomenon. In the heart of Diagon Alley, they discovered a hidden shop named the VR Wizard. Its entrance was discreetly concealed behind a holographic bookshelf, guarded by a password spell that only true wizards could decipher. Stepping inside, the trio was immediately engulfed in a vibrant mixture of colors, sounds, and seemingly infinite possibilities. They were met by a young witch named Luna Lovegood, who introduced herself as the proprietor of the VR Wizard. Luna explained that the virtual realm was created by skilled wizards to offer an immersive experience beyond anyone's wildest imagination.
Okay, I'll stop that there. This goes on for ages. So just from that one simple prompt, this is what ChatGPT has created. And you can expand on that as well. So I don't know about you, but my favourite way of experiencing Harry Potter, if you like, is the Stephen Fry audiobooks. I love those readings of it. So then I responded to that, and I said, again, I'm not going to let you hear the full thing because it goes on for ages, but I responded to that message and said this.
Could you rewrite this in the style of Stephen Fry reading it as an audiobook?
Could you rewrite this as Stephen Fry reading it in the style of an audiobook? So it took everything that it had already written and came back with this.
GPT. Chapter 17, The Enigma of the Virtual Realm. In this thrilling chapter, dear readers, we find our beloved trio of Harry Potter, Ron Weasley, and Hermione Granger embarking on a fantastical journey into the heart of the 21st century. A new challenge awaits them, one that unveils a mysterious world of virtual reality, where magic and technology intertwine in the most wondrous of ways. Imagine, if you will, Diagon Alley bustling with activity, yet hiding a secret among its enchanting shops. Among the many storefronts stands a discreet establishment, known only to those with a keen eye and a touch of wizarding intuition. It is none other than the VR Wizard, a hidden gem in the magical realm. As Harry, Ron, and Hermione step through the doors of this establishment, they are greeted by an ethereal presence, none other than Luna Lovegood. With her whimsical nature and a sparkle in her eyes, Luna introduces herself as the proprietor of the VR Wizard, the gateway to an extraordinary realm, beyond their wildest dreams.
I don't know about you, but I could imagine Stephen Fry reading that. And how it's doing that, I have no idea. But just from those couple of prompts, that is what it's been able to come up with. Now you might be thinking, yeah, okay, well that's, you know, that's good, that's a bit of fun. But can this actually be used for anything useful? Yes, it can. So this was looking at a conversation from my history, and I could go down to the bottom and carry on that conversation if I wanted to. But when you want to move on to something else, because it's already got in its mind, although it's going off context, it's already got kind of Harry Potter stuff in its mind, if you like. So if I was to go to the bottom, go to the text field and ask it something completely random. To be honest, with how good it is, it would probably come back with a perfectly fine response, but it might get a bit confused because it's trying to keep context and it's trying to follow along. So when you want to move on to something else, it's always best to go to a new chat. So I'm going to go to the menu button at the top.
Menu button. Pop-up. Virtual reality unveiled bullet turbo. Default for free. Virtual reality unveiled bullet. Virtual reality unveiled. Rename button.
So I could rename that chat if I wanted to.
Delete button.
I could delete it.
History button. Settings button. New chat button.
And there's new chat. So I'm going to go into new chat.
New message. Text field. Is editing. Character mode. Insertion point at start.
And straight away, I'm put into that text field. We're back on that main screen where you had the menu button, the text field, the dictate, and the send button. So because this is just a text field, you can use any input you want for this. So you can use Braille screen input. You could use either one. You've got two options for dictation, technically. You could use your Bluetooth keyboard, your Braille display, or you could just type on using the on-screen keyboard. So I've got my Bluetooth keyboard here. I'm just going to type in a question. One use that I find for this is instead of Googling things, it's often easier to just ask ChatGPT and get a pretty much instant response. So let's say, for example, I'm new to Outlook, the Microsoft Outlook email client, and I'm trying to respond to a new message. And I'm wondering if there's a keyboard shortcut for it. So to ChatGPT, I'm just going to type in that question. What is the keyboard shortcut to respond to a message in Outlook?
New message. Text field. Is editing. What is the keyboard shortcut to reply to a message in Outlook? Character mode. Insertion.
So there's the question. I'm going to press send.
Send button.
And as soon as I press send, I will feel some haptic feedback, which means that it's typing or generating an answer. I prefer to say typing just because of how human this can be sometimes. So I'm going to press send.
Sent. Dimmed.
And I'm getting
stop
these
generating button.
You heard it say stop generating. I'm getting these haptic buzzes and they've now stopped, which means it's stopped generating a response. So I'm now going to go back to the top of the screen and just flick to the right until I get to the response.
Menu button. Callum. What is the keyboard shortcut to reply to a message?
That's my question.
GPT. In Microsoft Outlook, the keyboard shortcut to reply to a message is simply Control plus R on Windows or Command plus R on Mac. This shortcut allows you to quickly respond to an email without using the mouse.
There you go. There's the answer. And that is correct as well. It is Control R or Command R to reply to a message. So that is one thing that I do quite a lot now. Instead of Googling something, I'll just ask the question to ChatGPT. And it's not always accurate. You've got to keep in mind that this is artificial intelligence. This is a computer still trying to figure out what you're asking and trying to work out the answer for you. But more often than not, if I'm just Googling simple things like this, you know, what's the keyboard shortcut for this, or what is the answer to this, because you can ask it, as I said, anything, I've found this to be a lot more useful, a lot quicker, a lot easier, rather than doing a Google search and then having to browse through websites. And I mean, I showed you two things there. One was it being creative, and one was it answering, I guess you could say, quite a simple question. But that is not even scratching the surface. That was two things that I showed you just as a quick demo of the app and of ChatGPT itself. But there are so many things that this could do. This text field is a multi-line text field, and there's pretty much no limits to this. I tend to use this as, I guess, a simpler Google. A lot of people use this to proofread their emails and proofread reports. Some people use this to help them with code, because you can even put code in here and, you know, say I'm trying to write an app that does this, and using this programming language, how can I write it? Or you can put in some actual code and say, what is the error with this, or can you correct this code? And it can sometimes do that. Some people have even used it to solve accessibility problems. You know, some people might say, I've got this particular web page or this particular bit of code and it's not accessible to screen reader users, or, you know, I'm developing a website, what should I do to make sure it's accessible to blind people or people with low vision or people with dexterity? And it can give you guidance. It can even come back with its own, you know, code samples and just all sorts. This is mind-blowing. So the basic way that this works is you type in your question. When you press send, you will get kind of haptic feedback while it's generating an answer. And then as soon as it's finished generating, the haptics will stop. And you can just flick around to the screen. Easier to just go from the top of the screen, in my opinion. But you can just flick around and you will find the answer. If those haptics do get a bit much, they were a bit for me, to be honest. I wasn't too keen on it. I thought it was a bit overkill on the haptics, but if they do get a bit much for you, the way you turn them off is in the settings. So if you go to, let's go back to that menu button at the top.
Menu, button, pop-up button, history.
First option is history. The second option is
settings.
Button. Settings. So let's double tap.
Double tap to dismiss pop-up window, but settings, heading.
Now, there's a few different settings here, most of them related to the account. I'm just going to flick down until I find the chat heading.
Words, headings, account, heading, chat, heading.
And then flick to the right.
Haptic feedback, switch button, on.
And there it is, haptic feedback. And at the minute it's on, but you just double tap that and that will turn it off.
Off.
And then if we go to the top of the screen.
Double tap, settings, heading, close, button.
Click close.
Menu. Button.
And then we're back to the main screen and that has disabled the haptics. So there you go. That is the ChatGPT app. A nice easy way of getting access to this right from your home screen.
Callum Stoneman, thank you so much for your demonstration of the ChatGPT app on iOS. Now, the first thing to clear up is, of course, the free version of ChatGPT that you're using in that app. It's not the latest and greatest, is it?
No, it's not. So as I said on there, that knowledge that it's got cuts off after, I think it's September 2021, they say. So if you ask about, you know, what happened in, you know, the news last year, or, you know, what are the current headlines, it won't know that. It can only tell you about things that have happened up until 2021. At this moment in time. And also it's GPT-4, which is what you get in the Plus version. And I don't know how this works within the app, but the free version is just text, whereas GPT-4, the model itself, which you get in the Plus version, this is all very confusing, isn't it? All these acronyms. But the newer version, the Plus version, can also do images as well. So you can send images to it and ask for details about the image. And I believe that's what things like the Be My Eyes virtual volunteer is using. That's using the newer model.
Still waiting for that, hoping to jump on that pretty soon.
Me too, yeah.
So this is not the one where you can ask questions about pictures, but you can ask it to tell you how to solve a Rubik's Cube and write you a poem or any number of things. The other tip I think it would be quite useful to share as well, if you wanted to use that content, say you were developing an outline for a presentation or something like that, and you wanted to copy that text to the clipboard to maybe paste in elsewhere, what do you think's the best way to do that?
The only way that I've found to do that so far is to do the, if you're using VoiceOver at least, do the three-finger quadruple tap. So tap four times with the three fingers, and that will copy the last thing that VoiceOver said to the clipboard. So if you get your VoiceOver focus on the response from ChatGPT and then just do that three finger quadruple tap, you don't even have to wait for VoiceOver to finish speaking. Just as long as it started saying the response or the bit of the response that you want to copy, then you can do it that way and then just paste that wherever you want.
And you might want to wait till the thing's finished generating the response before you do that.
Yeah, and that's where those haptics come in, I suppose. So if you've got those turned on, when it stops buzzing, then you know that it's finished generating or typing, as I usually tend to call it, and you've got a full answer there, ready to go.
Brilliant. Okie doke. Well, let us know what you think. Have you had occasion to try it? What are some of the more interesting use cases that you've found? Do let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Callum Stoneman, thanks a lot. Now, we've heard from Amanda, who is very interested in our interview with the good folks about that Chrome extension. Do you remember the one that's in beta that will hopefully describe images for you? Well, Amanda would like to share a couple of websites that she uses to describe images. And one of them is called Larva. Well, I'm going to spell it out. I think it's a large language, something or other. But anyway, LLAVA.hliu.cc. I'll give you that again. It's LLAVA.hliu.cc. Anyway, Amanda says that you can upload an image and you can ask some questions, and she finds that very useful. So obviously try that at your own risk and let us know how you get on. And Amanda is also looking forward to the Be My Eyes virtual volunteer service. And she's on the waiting list, as many people are. And Amanda is hoping to use that service to describe images on social media. Well, thank you very much for getting in touch, Amanda. We've also heard from William Richards, who is thinking about upgrading his phone. He's talking about what the SE 4th gen might be like. And William says that he has heard, rumour, that it will be based on the XR design and may not have a home button. Callum Stoneman, it's always a tricky business, isn't it, when speculating about what's round the corner. But, I mean, how would you feel about the demise of the home button if it does go away eventually?
Yeah, it is a tough one, especially with Apple, because there's all these rumours that go around, but I always take them with a pinch of salt, because, like, the core of Apple's business, see what I did there, is the secrecy. You know, we don't know what they're up to until we get to things like the Worldwide Developer Conference or the September events. So we don't really know what's coming. But personally, I think I'd be okay with it. I mean, I had an XR before my current phone. I've now got a 13. I do have an SE for work. And I must admit, I don't miss the home button, but Touch ID is brilliant.
Let's talk about Touch ID, because I think, you know, rumours of Touch ID's demise have been slightly exaggerated, because Apple's current SE phone, of course, has Touch ID. There's Touch ID in the power button on the iPad. And I think even some of the MacBooks have Touch ID as well. So it's still around, isn't it?
It is still around. And that's the question, I guess, is I think if the home button goes away, we'll be absolutely fine. But is Touch ID going away? I think that's the bigger question, and obviously we don't know. But even if it does, I mean, Face ID is not inaccessible. I think it's more tricky for us, definitely. There are times where I'd say Touch ID works 99% of the time, Face ID probably 95%. And it could probably, for my personal use case, I could probably improve that by turning off that attention aware feature, which is where your eyes have to be focused and sort of looking at the screen. But there's so much of my life on my phone that I'd rather lose that little bit of reliability for the added security. But the key with Face ID is just to listen to what VoiceOver tells you. You know, VoiceOver gives you some really, really good guidance on setting it up. You know, like tilt your head left, tilt your head right. I think it even tells you ways to move the phone to get a better picture. So it is accessible. And what I will say is getting it set up makes it seem a lot trickier than it actually is. But once it's set up and working, it tends to just work for me most of the time.
It does. And, you know, and I've used Face ID and it does work well. I personally like the ability to unlock my phone when it's in my pocket. I like to be able to maybe reach out in the night and unlock my phone while it's on charge without having to bring it in front of my face or whatever. So just a sort of personal preference, really, rather than an accessibility barrier. Well, there we are, William. Those are our thoughts. If anyone else wants to weigh in on this subject, do get in touch, like Amanda and William. You can email techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Well, would you believe it? It's nearly that time of year once again. Site Village Central is just around the corner, and here to tell us all about it is QAC's very own Paul Hopkins. Welcome to Tech Talk.
thanks for having me, first and foremost. Really appreciate it. Lovely introduction as always. So Cyber Village, I was, and I've said it so many times now, but my sort of unofficial strap line is see you at Cyber Village, because it really is like anybody that wants to come to Cyber Village that has any interest in vision impairment, our community, what we do, what we can achieve even, you know, what our hopes or what our aspirations are, or just wants to meet friends, connect, obviously see what the latest products and services are, which I've already alluded to. It really is for anyone that has an interest in vision impairment from, I would say, whatever perspective, really. We cover absolutely everything with the exhibitors that we have and with the seminars that we put on. And it's only increasing in that and keeping up with everything that is new, as well as, you know, keeping a sense and a perspective of what is more traditional. So it really is something for everybody. You know, we in danger of using too many words to describe what it is, but I think essentially for anybody that has an interest in our community and what we do and what we aspire to be.
Absolutely. Blind and partially sighted people are friends, families, teachers, educational professionals, rehab specialists. Anybody working in the field is very welcome at a Sight Village event. And of course, this is not your first event of 2023. You've already had an event down in Cardiff. So let's talk about the benefits then, because there are many, many reasons to come. Of course, an opportunity to catch up with friends and experts and all of that. But it's really the exhibition is the heart of Sight Village. But it's not just the exhibition, is it? So tell us firstly about some of your exhibitors and then maybe share a little bit of information about the webinars as well.
Okay, so I mean, we're always grateful to sort of the main sponsors, which in this case are this year, obviously, again, with Sight and Sound, incredibly supportive of us. And then Deafblind UK. So they're a bit more of a new entrance, I suppose, but very much welcome and looking forward to seeing what they bring and all the rest of that. And then the exhibitors, the ones that I've sort of picked for various reasons. Well, of course, your good sales at R&IB, again, have always been incredibly supportive of us, not least with, you know, being there and the radio interviews and all that we're doing now even. So, you know, very much appreciated. And then obviously Guide Dogs, Humanware, Cadent Gas, they've come a bit more recently, and that's always a good thing, because, you know, that they really do have a kind of an influence on what happens with vision impaired customers, with energy companies and all the rest of it. So, you know, again, a really useful people to have on board. Slightly more unusual, there's one called Flag Me, which I had to go and have a look what they're about, and they basically work with pharmacists to help target help for people with vision impairment when they come to the pharmacy. So I think that's quite an important bit, and they're also doing a seminar which we'll come on to in a bit. Technology Association of Vision Impaired People, which of course is TAVIP, TPT, so Thomas Pocklington Trust, both their student services and their sight loss councils are going to be there this time around. And an artificial intelligence related thing called Biped AI. And you would have to ask more about that. And so basically they've got a camera on a harness, and it appears that they're using artificial intelligence around self-driving cars. And they've been working in partnership with the Honda Research to come up with something that can aid vision impaired people when walking out and about, I guess, with guide dogs, mobility aids of any sort, and because they also mentioned people with wheelchairs and anyone that might need them. So yeah, exciting stuff and cutting edge stuff, I guess, as well as I said, the traditional ways of living with vision impairment. Yeah.
So lots and lots of exhibitors, just a flavour there, and then you've got webinars as well.
Well, seminars, yeah. So again, they're in Perth, and the venue is fantastic for that, which we'll come on to in a minute. But yeah, we think we have something in the region of 8 seminars a day at the moment. That could change, as in we may get more. But at the moment, we have Seeing Solutions. They're doing a seminar. Deafblind UK, Guide Dogs, Humanware, Ahlstrom Syndrome, New College Worcester, Flag Me, which is the one I mentioned just now, We Walk, And a bloke called Paul Hopkins apparently is doing a seminar too.
Oh, no. Fantastic. So lots to go at, lots of reasons to visit, lots of organisations to talk with, and of course, plenty of opportunities to get hands-on kit. That's often a reason people go, isn't it?
Yeah.
That you have people who are thinking about the next stage in their life, whether it's applying for disabled students allowance in higher education, maybe going into a new job, thinking about an access to work application, what equipment's going to be suitable. And coming to a Sight Village event, of course, it's a great way to go around the companies, lay your hands at all those different braille displays, have a look at all those magnifiers, listen to all those audio players, and try and work out actually which device feels right for me, which product is going to meet my requirements.
Yeah.
So quite a bit of logistical information, because you're in a new venue this year, so tell us a little bit about the thinking behind that.
We always want to try and get venues that are as accessible as possible once you're at the venue, but also access to the venue. And it always comes down to availability, because obviously the big venues tend to be incredibly expensive and not something we can necessarily are able to sort of reach to in that respect. But this time we've managed it, and this is the Eastside Rooms. I think calling the Eastside Rooms is kind of like almost an understatement, but that is the name. They are a fantastic exhibition space. It is in the city centre of Birmingham, and it's got a hotel above it as well for people that want to stay for the 2 days. You know, they can avail themselves of. And it's a Marriott A Loft, I think it's called, one of their signature brands there. So really nice hotel. Obviously, it's got the bars and restaurants and all that you'd expect with a hotel, but that you can use as part of the conference services. So incredible spaces, really nice seminar rooms, lots of from a technical point of view, you know, they're one of these tech forward hotels, they call themselves. So a lot of plug and play stuff. So I guess if you bring your iPhone, you can just stick it straight into a speaker in your room and that kind of thing. But lots to talk about in that regard. But really, I think come and find out yourself about it.
Right. So the Eastside Rooms, Central Birmingham. So does that mean Birmingham New Street?
So it's nearer to Birmingham Central University. So it's probably about a 10-15 minute walk from New Street. But we will be putting out an audio, ambient audio sort of directions, because I know people quite like that. You know, they like to have a sense of where they are before they go. And I think that's something we've managed to do before with some of our other exhibition spaces. So we'll do a route from New Street to the venue, whether that be walk or bus or taxi, I'm not quite sure yet. But it is definitely walkable, but it's... I found it a tad difficult when I tried to do it, but, you know, with people around me. So, you know, it's one of those. We'll work out what we think is the best option for people to take if they want to do it independently. And then, of course, you've got a really short 4 or 5 minute taxi ride to the venue.
Now, Sight Village, of course, is always free to attend for attendees,
yeah,
and visitors, but it is helpful if everybody registers.
Yeah, and I think lots of good reasons for that, not least the fact that, you know, we're more likely to know then, you know, how many volunteer guides we can try and get our hands on to help people around the exhibition and that kind of thing. So it does give us some advantages for knowing that, you know, it's not for anything other than that, you know, just so that we know you're coming, we've got your information there, you know, to give you when you arrive and all the rest of it, and we can, as I say, hopefully assign you to a guide if you need one and that kind of thing.
Fantastic. Well, I know you and Karen and the rest of the team have been working really hard on the 2023 Sight Village Central event, and can't wait to be there. Looking forward to being in person again in Central Birmingham. What is the best way to get in touch, to register, to find out more?
The best thing to do, I think, is www.qacsightsvillage.org, and then that will give you all the information, all the opening times. I would also say that it's a great opportunity. The exhibitor list and seminars are already up there, so you can register for seminars and that kind of thing already. And also, you can click on the, each of the exhibitor names and be taken to their details as well. So if you wanted to plan who you want to come and see, because there are so many exhibitors and all that, that might be a good thing to do in preparation, so that you've got a really good sense then of where you want to go and what you want to do.
Anything I've not asked you that you wanted to add?
Reservations for the hotel. I think I've got a phone number for that, which is 0121 820 6000. And I think that's a good option. Oh, and it's option one if you want to be put through to the reservations, but it's very clear on their phone there. So that's a quite a nice, easy way of booking if you want to do that.
Okay, do you want to give that phone number just one more time, Paul?
So it's 0121 820 6000 for the hotel reservations.
Paul Hopkins from QAC. See you at Site Village.
We will. Thank you.
That's it. That brings us to the end of another Tech Talk. Thank you so much for your company. We very much appreciate that. We are going to be taking a look at some technology that's no longer available. It's a familiar tale. You come to rely on a piece of technology and then it goes obsolete. So what are we missing? What did you once have that you no longer have anymore? What do you think we need back in the room? Let us know about the technology of the past that you long for. It's the usual email address for your thoughts on that and anything else you've heard on Tech Talk, or maybe you've got an idea for an item. Why not drop us a line, or even better, send a voice note to techtalk@rnib.org.uk, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But from myself, Dave Williams, and co-host this week, Callum Stoneman.
Bye from me. See you next week.
Bye-bye.